Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, boys and girls, to another edition of the FootballDiehards.com podcast. My name is Skip Lacombe. We got lots of stuff going on. Brett Favre officially retires. I know that kind of seems like a broken record, but it should be official at this point, at least for now. But to talk about that and a whole lot more, we bring in senior editor of FootballDiehards.com, Bob Harris. Bob, what's up?
Not much, Skip. How you doing? Hey, that whole Brett Favre thing, I hear it might be over. Any word on that?
It's definitely not over. I'm sure it's not over. You may think it's over. We may want it to be over, but I still don't think it's over.
You know, I think what's funny is if you look, if you take a giant step backwards, and I mean a giant step backwards.
Like 2 years.
No, let's go back even further to May of 2003 when the questions about retirement first started. I think it was in May of 2003. He was asked, you know, gee, do you think it's getting to be that time, you know, and maybe injuries are a worry, and he wouldn't give a good answer then. You go down the road in 2006 in an interview with ESPN, if he had to make a decision right then, he'd say he wasn't coming back, and then he's coming back. I mean, this isn't something new, and it's the reason, again, the Packers finally packed it in. I mean, they just, how many times can you take it? And I'll remind you, too, that there were episodes in there that kind of, you know, give you a little insight into the Favre, which is, you know, he was a little mad when Steve Mariucci didn't get the coaching job when Mike Sherman left, if you'll remember that, and that kind of soured him. And it just, it all leads, the paths all lead to the same place, and that's Ted Thompson. A little bit of dislike or disrespect or whatever you want to call it, and he's admitted to it since then. But it's just been an ongoing thing since 2003. And if every year, you know, if every year after the season was over, I talked to our publisher, Emil Cadillac, and I said, God, I don't know if I want to do this again, Emil. At some point, I would expect he's going to hire somebody who wants to do it, or at least he knows is going to put in a certain effort to do it, you know, when the time comes, instead of having to wait around and find out if I want to do it. So, you know, I think that's where the problem lies here. Favre really felt like he deserved to be the one to maybe call the shots, and Ted Thompson, as the general manager of the team, somehow thought he was supposed to be running it. There was the problem. And, you know, it came to a head. Then we go into this offseason. Favre retires from the Jets, asked for his release, which he said he would never do, sat there and told Ed Werder early in the year, yes, I'm not playing again, and then decided he wanted to play again until this week when he decided he didn't want to play again.
Yeah, absolutely. So this story has been going on forever at this point, it seems like.
And if you really believe that it's really over, well, I probably would tell you that you ought to think again, too, because I don't know that it really is.
Well, yeah, and Brett Favre even came out earlier, I believe yesterday or the day before, saying that he wouldn't necessarily 100% close the door. If someone comes calling November 1st, who knows, I believe was the quote. I truly believe it's over, but if someone calls November 1st, who knows? So,
yeah, who does Minnesota play that week?
I believe it's the Green Bay Packers.
I think you're right. I think, wow, imagine that. Who would have
guessed? Isn't that crazy? And a lot of people have been making a whole lot about how Brett Favre wants to stick it to the Packers. And he doesn't want to stick it to the Packers. He likes the Packers. He wants to stick it to Ted Thompson because he's been the one who's been, in Brett's eye, causing the harm and causing the wrong here. But I think Brett still has a lot of love for the organization and clearly for the fans that have supported him over the years.
Of course he does, because they let him run the organization for how many years? I mean, Michael, you know, he's kind of had his run of joy. And, hey, he gave them results. And you know what? Everyone was pretty satisfied with those results, you know. But then, you know, change is inevitable. And as we get older, it's something we have to learn how to deal with. Brett Favre struggles with the change and struggles to make up his mind. I think we can all understand that aspect of it. And I don't think anyone dislikes Brett Favre. You know, I kind of get a little sarcastic and I crack on Favre a little bit. And I don't want to give people the wrong idea. It's not anything. It's not about Favre. It's about the story. It's having this story. You know, everyone hates the story. Nobody hates Brett Favre. Nobody has a big issue that he can't make up his mind. I think we've all been in situations where we can't make up our mind. But all of us don't have Rachel Nichols sitting on our front lawn for 365 days a year telling everybody every intimate detail of the decision-making process on ESPN five times a day. That, you know, it tends to wear on everybody. And I think you know, that's where everyone stands. You know, we just wish it would be over. I think it's not.
So what does Brett do from here? Is he just going to hang up his shoulder pads, put on his Wranglers, and ride his tractor into the sunset, or?
He's going to keep working out, he says, and hey, if you know, the Vikings have said they're not going to pursue, you know, the door is shut, and Favre's agent, Buzz Cook, has said that, you know, Minnesota is really the only team he'd be interested in playing for, and I do kind of believe that. That makes a lot of sense to me. And so if the Vikings aren't going to come calling, then Favre probably isn't going to be playing. But, you know, let's nothing is certain in this business. I think that's the one thing I've learned in the 1,000 years I've been doing it.
Absolutely. Well, that also brings up an interesting side story to who's going to be the quarterback. We've got the quarterback battle going on in Minnesota between Rosenfels and Tavares Jackson. Who do you think is going to end up winning that battle?
You know, I kind of thought when they got Sage Rosenfels, it was the second year they tried to get him. They really made an effort to bring him in. But, you know, I thought at that time that Tavares Jackson had, you know, kind of acquitted himself well down the stretch last season after Gus Frerotte got hurt. He didn't do well in the playoffs, but, you know, down the stretch of the regular season, he seemed to have some rapport with his receiving core. And I thought he finally showed signs of maybe turning the corner or showing signs that he could turn the corner. Now, they still brought Rosenfels in, and, you know, I think that's more an indication, and the pursuit of Favre is kind of more an indication of where the coach's status is, you know, where Brad Childress is at. I mean, I think obviously he needs to win this year, or probably pretty much he's going to be asked to hit the road, and pretty much everyone he brought with him is going too. So they all need to figure out who that guy is. I think, you know, if you look at it objectively, neither of those guys is somebody you want to count on. That's why they went after Favre. I keep looking at Sage Rosenfels. I look at the Vikings organization, the kind of team they are. They have a great running game with Adrian Peterson. They have a big defense, big play defense, the disruptive unit that can create turnovers and make plays of their own. And, I mean, what do you need? What kind of quarterback do you need in that case? You need a guy who's capable of protecting the ball, and that's not Sage Rosenfels. I mean, Sage Rosenfels is a serial idiot at times. You know, he'll play three quarters of a game great and then make that really stupid play. And if you look at his, you know, over the last 8 years, he has, 29 interceptions and 30 touchdown passes. Now, is that the guy you want to hitch, you know, if I'm Brad Childress, is that the guy I want to hitch my, you know, my future to? I'm not real sure because he does tend to come up short at the worst times. And then you look, and I like the thing that Mark Craig from the Minneapolis Star Tribune wrote about Tarveris Jackson. You know, three seasons into his career, Jackson is that dangerous commodity, a quarterback who isn't good enough to trust nor bad enough to unload and forget. And that's kind of where they stand right now. They're going to rely on guys like Adrian Peterson and a few playmakers in the receiving game. But, you know, as far as the offense is concerned, they're going to need that big run blocking line, Adrian Peterson, and the rushing attack to do well, and they're going to count on their defense to make big plays, whoever the quarterback is. My guess right now, I'm leaning towards Jackson today.
All right, the final angle in the whole Favre saga is obviously if Favre would have gone up to Minnesota, his all the offensive players would have gotten a really big pump in the fantasy line. How much are they going to drop now since it appears that Favre's not going to be there?
You know, Adrian Peterson doesn't take a knock at all. And honestly, you know, look, in the mock drafts I've been taking part in, you know, none of those guys are going very high. Bernard Berrien's been going fairly low. I don't think it really hurts him. I think, you know, he's still more of a touchdown threat than a catches threat, you know, a guy you'd look for in a point per reception league anyhow. I thought Vincente Shanko, the tight end, really started to come into his own late last year. I think that'll continue. And I think all these guys will kind of remain more touchdown threats than performance threats, you know, more they're not the big point per reception guys you're looking for. But they'll be solid players, and they'll be solid players with Jackson or Rosenfels in there. It's just how successful can the Vikings be overall. And you know, when a team is playing from behind or doing things like that, it kind of changes the dynamic of their offense, and it could hurt just the overall totals. But at the end of the day, you know, when you sit down at your draft and Adrian Peterson is there, whether you're drafting first, second, third, whatever, you're probably going to want to draft him. So that's the big deal of this whole story is, it's not going to affect Adrian Peterson's value, even if he would have rather played with Brett Favre. Rosenfels and Jackson will be more than happy to hand him the ball.
Absolutely. He's still going to be a pretty good player this year, it looks like. Now, Michael Vick is obviously making a whole lot of news. He's a whole lot of news recently. He is fully out of jail. He says he's in discussion with lots of different people. He says he's close to a deal with somebody. There's some rumors out there, maybe New England, and some people are squashing those rumors. What's going on? What's the latest as of right now on Vic?
Yeah, he made a whole bunch of news today. There was the rumor mill started going earlier today that he was in New England, and which really didn't make a lot of sense because he was in Virginia for a bankruptcy hearing. But nonetheless, the rumors continue to fly, and they were kind of compounded when a Miami Herald beat writer, Tim Darlington, kind of said, yeah, I got two sources saying he's there. Well, that, you know, everyone's going nuts. And Bill Belichick didn't help. He was asked earlier today, hey, will you rule out signing Vic? I won't rule out signing anyone, Belichick kindly says. And, you know, that gets the ball rolling. But the local writer there, Mike Reese from the Boston Globe, one of the more reliable writers around, kind of put the kibosh on things today, and that'll help cool the furor. But, you know, the thing that's interesting about this, no, Vic, just for the record, Mike Vick was not in New England today. He did not work out for the Patriots. Reese does not believe he will work out for the Patriots. NBC Sports' Tom Curran, who used to cover the Patriots for the Providence Journal, says the same. There's no way the Kraft, you know, that's not their brand. You know, they have too much tied up in the area to bring in a guy like Vick with his reputation. And I think, you know, that makes sense to me. That said, you know, when you look at what the Miami Dolphins did to the Patriots last year with that Wildcat attack and Ronnie Brown, you have to realize, you know, you have to imagine Bill Belichick at some point sits around saying, boy, if I had a guy who could do that, I could do some things with it. But, you know, that's just kind of the wishful thinking that we all sit around and do speculation. And until there's something more concrete, I think a lot of teams are waiting. And, you know, you'll hear things floated out there that, oh, maybe this team is interested or maybe this team's not interested, as team officials try to gauge the reaction of the local fans to the various scenarios that are tossed out there.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they'll take a little bit of a wait-and-see approach before anyone steps up and says, yes, we want some Michael Vick, they're going to find out how much that's going to cost them.
So do you still think, though, that Vic's going to be able to have a deal done here in the near future? There's also been some rumors that he may be joining one of the other leagues, like the UFL or something along those lines.
Well, I do think if the UFL, you know, there's been some rumors out there today that he could make a seven-figure salary in the UFL. If that's the case, it seems like it would be a good idea, because I'm not sure, you know, he's going to make that same money, especially if he, you know, if he's going to miss up to five games or, you know, miss the first 6 weeks of the season, whatever. You know, those are game checks. Those you don't get, you know, if you sign a year contract, maybe he signs for the minimum, you know, which would be $750,000, and he loses six games. That's not the kind of money he needs to get out of the hole he's in. And the UFL money would be closer to it if those reports are true, and nobody's denying them. So, you know, the UFL needs a face, and Mike Vick is that, you know, for better or worse, and he's desperately in need of money. So, if it comes down to it, you know, and that those are his options, hey, here's a big pile of money and here's this little tiny pile of money, you know, maybe the UFL isn't a bad approach. You know, certainly he would have a better chance of earning a starting quarterback job, even though, you know, I can understand the arguments out there that Mike Vick is as good, if not maybe better, assuming he's still Mike Vick, than at least half the quarterbacks starting for the NFL right now.
Yeah, and you'd have to think that would probably be the case. So that should be interesting as it goes down. I got to think we're going to have some movement, some resolution to this in the next couple of weeks, though, right?
I would say, yeah. I would say it would happen pretty soon. I mean, he said he was close. You know, whenever you hear the player or the agent floating things like that out there, you tend to take them with a grain of salt. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's not true. It just means we take it with a grain of salt. You know, there's going to be a lot of speculation. Like I said, you're going to hear a lot of teams, maybe not the teams directly, but a lot of trial balloons being floated out there. From a fantasy perspective, you take the wait-and-see approach and kind of, you know, lay back and not get too excited. This is a time of year, by the way, Skip, when we as fantasy owners tend to, you know, we're like fish. You throw a lure in the water and we chase it. You know, the reports out of Denver today that Ryan Terrain looked awesome in the first practice, you know, and already, you know, people are, ooh, what can he do? And you're thinking, man, it's the first day, you know. Let's go back and look at everything that's happened over the offseason in all these cases and in all the news that you hear out of training camps and stuff, and put it in the perspective of one data point in a long series of data points. And let's just, you know, we'll take the wait-and-see approach on Vic. If he ends up somewhere, hey, he's going to miss a big chunk of time. We're going to have time to figure out what his role is going to be. I would not recommend drafting Michael Vick based on his signing alone. I would wait and see what kind of role he might be able to earn with that team, what the team's needs are, what kind of system the team uses, what's the rest of the personnel around him like. And you know, we'll have time to do that, and maybe he's a little more suitable as a free agent pickup than a draft pick. And if somebody in your league wants to draft them, well, hey, you know my theory, let them be the hero.
Let them be the one to go ahead and take that, and then that's going to be able to open up somebody even better. You mentioned running back Ryan Terrain out of Denver. Another Denver running back, Brandon Marshall, did show up to camp, so he'd coming off the soreness with his surgery recently and kind of a holdout, kind of maybe wanting another deal. What's that really mean for him?
You know, he came out today, and he was actually pretty impressive today. He showed up. He reported on time. They asked him to report early because he is coming off the hip surgery. And he reported on time, missed a couple of days of practice. You know, basically the you know, soreness was the reason cited. But he was out there today, and he was very impressive. But I think if you go back to when he showed up, you know, some of the things he said, he seemed to be a little bit pouty. And his big claim was, you know, I have faith in management. And, you know, that's a hint that he thinks that Pat Bowlen promised him a trade if, you know, when he asked him for one. And I keep going back to the Jay Cutler situation when at some point Pat Bowlen came out and said his short-term memory wasn't that good. And is Brandon Marshall counting on the fact that maybe Bowlen forgot he didn't say, you know, he said no, and no, I won't trade you, and that Marshall's going to convince him like a Jedi mind trick? Yes, he said he would trade me. I want to go now. That is the trade you're looking for. I'm not sure that that's going to work out that well. I mean, all indications are the Broncos have no interest in moving him. There's teams with needs, obviously, and more needs are going to come up. The Baltimore Ravens still, you know, not sure how they're going to – well, they think they're sure how they're going to fill the hole left by Derek Mason's still retirement. So, you know, there will be things developing. But I think the problem for Brandon Marshall is – he has no leverage. The Broncos have him under contract. He's going to make over $2 million this year. The Broncos, you know, unless somebody comes up and pays them a premium, which, you know, it's hard to imagine anyone doing for a guy with his, you know, level of baggage, you know, sure, they'll listen, but I just don't see him going anywhere. Now, the hope in Denver is, now that he's there working with teammates and, you know, buddying up with everybody, and he's in the locker room, and there's guys in the locker room that kind of are – you know, following the Patriots way, because it came with McDaniel from New England, like Jabbar Gaffney, mm-hmm. and some veterans in there, that maybe they can convince him that this whole thing's going to work out well for him. And, you know, maybe if he starts seeing how the offense, you know, is suited to his talents, you know, certainly did good things for Randy Moss in New England. So the hope is he'll come around now that he's buddying up with the boys. And you know what? And he may well. He's not, you know, he's not the most mature guy. And you get him around some influences, some good influences, and I could see him coming around.
Well, you said pouty and immature and Broncos. My first thought was Jay Cutler, who happens to be back in the news again, too. Looks like he's having a hard time getting along with some pretty big boys up in Chicago, as Urlacher came out earlier this week, and their reports are that he used a stronger word than wuss to describe him, and so there may be a little feud going on there. Is that just the beginning of the implosion, or how do you think that's going to work out?
You know, we'll start out by saying everyone involved has denied it. Bobby Wade, who kind of let it out of the bag, the Minnesota Vikings receiver, former Chicago Bear, said that he went to Las Vegas with Urlacher, and Urlacher, you know, called him the wussy with the P, and Cutler. And, you know, and would that really be a surprise? Because I think that's what Urlacher calls everyone. Isn't that what he called his kid? Isn't that what was claimed in, like, a civil suit or something? I mean, you know, it doesn't surprise me terribly that a middle linebacker
– kind of a term of endearment for him.
Might have that opinion of a quarterback, any quarterback, even his own, especially one who talked his way out of one situation and into another. I do know, you know, I go back to talking to Matt Forte the day that the trade happened, you know, the day after. And, I mean, he was pretty shocked. And you know, as happy as he was to have a Pro Bowl quarterback, I can tell you there was, you know, a little bit of, you know, I could sense that he was – you know, he felt bad that Orton was gone. Orton was kind of a well-liked guy there. So, you know, and I also go back to something else. You know, there have been other offensive skill players in Chicago that haven't been popular with the defense. The most recent one would be Cedric Benson. And he took some beatings. He took some beatings on the practice field at the hands of guys like Brian Urlacher. So that's not going to happen with Cutler, by the way. They're not going to get their hands on him like that. But, you know, it would not be that out of character if it happened. If it did happen, you know, I think, you know, everyone will get past it, and probably everyone figures that's pretty much what Urlacher thinks about everybody, and they'll just move forward, and you know, hey, it's locker room. It'll get worked out.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and that's certainly the hope. But one kind of interesting dynamic is that is pretty much any team in the NFL has that kind of alpha male type guy on the team. Typically, it's a quarterback, that leader type guy. But I think it'd be hard to argue that Urlacher's kind of that alpha male on that team. Do you think Jay Cutler's going to try to want to kind of step into that? And, I mean, obviously, Urlacher's probably not going to let that go. Is that dynamic going to be able to get worked out pretty easily?
You know, I don't know if Cutler is that guy, you know, that alpha male guy. And, you know, we've seen it work in other teams to varying degrees. I go back to Philadelphia. I mean, well, you know, when Donovan McNabb was trying to stay above the Terrell Owens fray, I mean, who was it? It was Hugh Douglas, or as he called himself, the Ambadassador, who did most of the talking with his friends in the locker room, from what we've heard on the outside, when it came to letting Terrell Owens know that people were behind McNabb. But, you know, when things like this happen, if you do get those divisions, you know, they're best hashed out in the locker room. And I don't think this will be a division. I don't think Jay Cutler is the guy who has to, you know, everyone has to follow around. And if they do, they better know all the bars in Chicago, because that's where he's going.
Well, absolutely. Well, that story will probably not get too much more play, but, you know, who knows? Maybe Urlacher and Cutler get into it, and that could get very interesting, though.
Hey,
all right.
You know, it's a great story when a team's middle linebacker calls the quarterback a wussy with a P. That's awesome.
Well, and it's definitely a great story for somebody who doesn't like Jay Cutler, which there are those people out there, San Diego Chargers fans like myself. But anyway, moving
and
on.
Phillip Rivers.
Phillip
Rivers probably shares that whole theory.
Yeah, me and Phillip are tight, too, so I'll have to ask him about that. All right, I want to move on to Arizona now, too. Kurt Warner is still feeling some soreness from his hip injury earlier. He says it may take 6 to 12 months to fully recover. How do you think that's going to affect his value?
You know, he played with it all last year, and, you know, that's the reason he got it fixed. I think he's glad he got it fixed. You hate to hear someone, you know, saying the words, it still hurts, and it might be an issue for a while, but, you know, I don't, you know, he doesn't throw with it, and he's not the most mobile guy in town anyway, so I'm gonna not let it worry me too much, and I'm going to take some solace in the fact that Anquan Boldin showed up and seems to be, if not content, willing to let his contract situation play out without throwing any screaming fits or coming up with any mysterious hamstring pulls that might keep him from taking part in the regular activities of the team, which is something we saw last year. I think that's a good sign in and of itself. So, you know, there'll be plenty to focus on. I think Warner will be fine. We've got to see who can win that running back job there. There's, you know, Beanie Wells was drafted in the first round, but, you know, the general sentiment is he missed a lot of time due to his graduation date. He's missed a lot of off-season work, so maybe Tim Hightower opens as a starter. We'll see about that. Beanie Wells is, you know, Beanie Wells gives something the Cardinals something at halfback they haven't had for a while, and that's a big guy capable of making big plays, and I think he'll be in there soon enough. And whatever they can get out of the running game, and they will get more out of Wells than they got last year, I think, ultimately, that's going to help Warner. Anything that can keep the defense from teeing off on the pass rush and allow him to do his job a little better in terms of dropping back without the pressure is going to work in Warner's favor.
Absolutely. Anquan Boldin, too, is finally softening his stance with the Cardinals, too. Looks like he's just going to kind of sit there, get his football mindset on.
I think he's going to be fine. You know, he changed agents. He went with Tom Condon away from Drew Rosenhaus. Two totally different approaches in how they deal with contracts, those agents, you know, direct opposites. They'll take the low-key approach now, and I think he's getting some good advice. You know, again, just like Brandon Marshall, you know, Anquan Boldin doesn't have a lot of leverage in this case. He's still under contract. Nobody has to move him. Nothing has to happen. And the theory floating around from those who follow the team closely is he'll get a new deal maybe, you know, before this season is over, maybe sometime during the season, but probably not before the season. So maybe he's realized his position and he's going to take, you know, he's going with a more patient approach. And however much, he, you know, however much that keeps him on the field in practices and working in toward the same goal, I don't think anyone's questioned his desire once he's on the field. And last year that was delayed a little bit. You know, he kind of, it wasn't a holdout, but it was kind of like the injury-related holdout for a while. So I think that he's a little more on board this year. Hey, that helps everybody involved.
Absolutely. Too. Some teams are able to finally ink up some of their draft picks. Do you want to quickly get into them and see what kind of impact that's going to have? Raiders were able to go ahead and sign Darius Haywood Bay, their wide receiver, who's one of the fastest guys, as you know, Al Davis loves his speed. Also, the Rams able to ink Jason Smith to a contract, and Josh Freeman agrees to a contract with the Bucks. Any of these players going to really have significant value this year?
You know, I think, well, Smith, I mean, whatever keeps Mark somebody from hitting Mark Bulger, who's been hit more than enough, is more power to the Rams on that one. Hayward Bay, whatever gets him on the field, working, you know, if you look back, I mean, even his college coach, Maryland, said, you know, he needs to work on his hands. He does. Whatever, you know, receiver is not an easy position to make the transition from the college to the pros. He's already, you know, starting out behind the curve. Has a lot of speed, but not all the skills. So he needed to be in there from day one, and that he's in there now is very helpful to him. Josh Freeman might be the more interesting. You know, there's been some talk that he'll get fast tracked into the starting job. We'll have to see about that. I think Byron Leftwich ultimately will have a lot to say about that. But you know, we know what Leftwich is, and you know, he's not very mobile. He can throw the ball down the field, but I think if you're looking for, you know, if you have a guy with Josh Freeman's talents, and he shows signs that he can get the job done. You look at last year, you know, we've talked about this before with Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco. You know, the NFL, when they see something work, they think it's going to work every time. So it would not surprise me if he gets fast-tracked in if Leftwich struggles or if Luke McCown struggles. And, you know, what to lead us to believe that Luke McCown is capable of doing anything but struggling, I'm not sure. So, you know, hey, he is going to have some value. And any of these guys getting into camp from the first day, that is always a benefit. The more, the merrier when it comes to rookies getting in practice time.
Absolutely. And it looks like there may also be a quarterback competition going on up in New York with the Jets. It looks like Clemens may actually get the start ahead of rookie Mark Sanchez. Is that surprising?
Yeah, that will surprise me if that's how it works out. I can understand why they're going in there with the, yes, Kellen Clemens is, you know, our starter today and, you know, maybe tomorrow and for the next couple of days. But, you know, Rex Ryan has stressed it's an open competition, and if you look back to everything he said all along, and that kind of takes us back to the don't get too caught up in any single development that goes on in training camp. Look back at what we've learned over the long haul. You know, Rex Ryan coming from Baltimore knows what a rookie quarterback can do when you get tossed into the fray. I just don't think they drafted Sanchez to do a lot of watching. Now, if he's not the opening day starter, I will be surprised. If he's not starting in the middle of the season, I'll be shocked. I think he's there to start, and this is more just a nod to the veteran, you know, to making the young guy win the job as opposed to handing it to him. And that, you know, kind of helps out in the locker room too. There won't be any linebackers calling him a wussy with a P that way.
Yeah, probably not. So, Bob, what's going on? You got a notebook coming out this weekend?
Got the last notebook of the offseason coming out this weekend, and that brings us into something else. As anyone who has the magazines or has been visiting the website knows, we start up our August update draft guide next Tuesday. And what that means is you get constant news all day, every day, throughout the week, cheat sheets, rankings, depth charts, the whole nine yards. We go into our preseason draft guide mode. If you haven't checked it out before, hit us next Tuesday. Find out what it's all about. If you have the magazine, you just plug in the codes from the magazine that give you free access to all 25 weeks of our premium content for absolutely no cost at all.
And free is pretty cheap.
Yeah, oh, man, you get everything. And if you didn't get a magazine, we do have a deal where we'll charge you $8, the price of a magazine, and we'll give you free access to the site and send you a magazine. So I recommend everyone get on board. If you haven't checked out the preseason August update or the regular season flash update, there's a reason why I've been doing this for 17 years, Skip. I don't like to brag, but I'm pretty darn good at it.
Pretty good at what you do. Go ahead.
I know what people are looking for. I know the information you need. And the goal is to make, you know, we don't think we're the experts here. You're the experts. We're the guys that help you be the experts. We have target stats, constant flow of news. We give you the rankings, but we're not telling you what to do. We're telling you what we do. And if you need a little more help than that, we've got more help. And that's, you know, that's always been our goal here, and I think it's why we've been around for a while, is, you know, we're not, you know, we know why you play fantasy football, because you're smarter than the other guys, and we're the guys that make you smarter. That's our
absolutely job. And of course, you could just pick up one of those magazines for the $8 and get the flash update, or you could just go and get all four magazines, the Pro Forecast, the Cheat Sheets, the Draft Book, and the Diehards magazine for the low, low price of $24.
That's a pretty good deal.
That's a great deal. All right, Bob. Well, thanks so much. Be sure to check out the very last edition of the Fantasy Notebook magazine this weekend. And until next week, this has been the FootballDiehards.com podcast. Thanks a lot.